Right, let's start with this. Anyone any idea what's in here? Let me give it to you. You can take the lid off. I wouldn't suggest you drink it, but you can take the lid off. It's quite safe. It won't explode. Have a smell. See if you've got any idea what's in there. Does it have a smell? Not much, is there? It's not much there. What colour is it? It's a greeny-white colour. Anyone any ideas what's in here? Yeah. Sparkling water. Close. Yeah? Sprite. Nothing that exciting, I'm afraid. Actually, it's probably more exciting. In here, we've got roughly 2 litres of seawater from the south coast. Anyone hazard a guess at how many plankton there are in that bottle? Approximately. I haven't been out and counted them. But approximately, how many plankton do you reckon there are in that bottle? Any guesses? 20,000. Any raise on 20,000? 100,000, a million? Oh, 100 million. No, so there's approximately 2 million plankton in that bottle. And most of those are what are called phytoplankton. So that means that they take up carbon dioxide, the nasty gases in the air, and give out oxygen, which is what we need. So I'm going to ask you to all do something for me, and that is breathe in really deeply. And when you've breathed in, hold it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Breathe out again. Okay. Did you know that 30% of the oxygen that you are breathing in this room, comes from one type of plankton found in this bottle of water? It's got a horrible long name. It's called pyrochlorococcus. And I can't pronounce it and I can't spell it. But 70% of all the oxygen in the oceans is created by one type of plankton. It's the plankton that gives seawater in the tropics that lovely greeny or bluey colour. And it's in real trouble. Now, we know our planet's in trouble, but sometimes it's good just to go right down to one tiny species that we rely on to breathe. And that's this one type of plankton. And that plankton is dying at an extraordinarily fast rate. It's because of several reasons. Our oceans are filling with tiny little bits of plastic. That's problem one. Our oceans are becoming more and more acid. That's problem two. And our oceans are warming far faster than at any other time in recorded history. So our ability of our seas to store carbon dioxide, that nasty gas that we're producing, and give out oxygen is diminishing every single year. The reality is, and this is a rather oblique thing, particularly to say to young people, but there is a lot of hope at the end of this, so hold on to the hope that's coming. And that is that our planet is in so much trouble. The latest UN report that came out yesterday indicates that we might have as little as 80 years left. That's a really sobering thought. This is 1,000 leading scientists saying that we're in that much trouble. If any of you went down to the doctors and the doctors said, I found something in your blood test and it's not looking good, but if you deal with it now, I reckon you can get a clean bill of health. What would you do? Would you sit there and go, actually, I'm all right. I'm not going to bother. You wouldn't do that, would you? You'd go to the doctor and you say, I want to get better, so give me the right medicine or give me the surgery and I will make a recovery. And that's great. What you wouldn't do is ignore it. But what we are doing on this planet is ignoring the depth of the crisis we are facing. And unless we change the way we behave and the way we live and the way we treat the world in which we rely, youth ministry will no longer be of any great importance. Meeting in our churches on a Sunday morning will be not of great importance. What we learn in school won't be of great importance. I am a firm believer in kids going on strike on a Friday and saying, if you adults aren't going to make a difference, we're going to sure as eggs are eggs go out there and say, we are the new adults in the room and we're going to make a stand. It's time we did things differently. So what does that mean? So the first thing is to say, all is not lost. There are amazing, incredibly creative, really exciting initiatives taking place in this country right now that are beginning to make and reshape the way we think. And I want to just share with you two amazing little stories of things that have happened in the last few weeks to inspire you, and then give you 5 points as the church here to take away and think about how you might actually act differently. So the first is a project up in Derbyshire. And an Ethiopian pastor was visiting this church in Derbyshire a few weeks ago, where a group of 11 churches have got together to transform a waste space into an amazing community nature reserve. And the Ethiopian pastor said to one of the church pastors there, I don't see what this has got to do with church mission. You know, how is this changing lives? At the end of the day, it's great if you're looking after wildlife, but it's not the most important thing. The gospel is about saving people and encouraging them to come into a relationship with Jesus. Now, the pastor there is a blunt northerner, so he didn't mince his words, and he said this, and forgive the accent. He said, Pastor, he said, I'm going to give you a hammer and a nail, and we're building a path for the community, and I want you to go out, and when you're on your hands and knees, you can make us a path, and you can pray. And as you're doing that, people will come past you, and when they come past you, you can share the love of Jesus with them. So he laughed, and off he went with his hammer. And the first person who came along the path was an elderly lady who just lost her husband. And she had to walk round him to go past. And as she walked round him, she looked down and saw this man banging in hammers and nails on this path and said, what are you doing and why are you doing it? And the pastor got up and he said, well, we're creating a nature reserve that you can really enjoy. But he said, personally, me, I'm an Ethiopian pastor. I've come over for a week and I'm doing it because I love Jesus. And the lady broke down in tears and then and there gave her life to the Lord. That's the abridged version of the story. Just a few weeks ago, one or two of you may even know this story, we run an urban nature reserve on a former heroin dealing area in West London. Big drug dealing problem. We were approached by the Met Police. And they said, we want you to take on this site, we want you to transform it for wildlife, give place for bees to flourish, for insects to flourish, for birds to flourish, and see if you can do something for the community at the same time. Long and short of it is we took that site on, we prayer walked around it, cleared 54 tons of rubbish. And a few weeks ago, this big Asian guy, and I can only describe him as big, he was about 3 times as wide as me, he had a little bit of hair up the middle, about the same hair as me actually, dark glasses, gold chains around his neck, and he had 2 minders on either side of him. So they walked onto the site. I'm going to pick on you. Sorry. He walked onto the site and stood about this far away, and I was really frightened. I thought, this guy's going to pull a knife or a gun. He doesn't like me very much. And then I thought, I recognise him. In the London Metro as one of the heroin dealers in London who'd been recently arrested. At that point, I really worried. And he looked at me, and he pointed his finger, and then he pointed at his heart, and he said, I've been here for 17 years, and all I'll say to you is I have been doing really, really bad things here. And he said, me and my mates, we've been watching what you have been doing for the last 2 years. And here, he said, I'm feeling something different. And he said, I can't explain it, other than that I am loving what I am seeing. You're not telling people what you're doing, you're showing people what you're doing. And I've come here with one message from the dealers of West London, and that is we are no longer going to deal in this area. And on the other hand, my 2 mates here, they say they're really handy with strimmers. Needless to say, we didn't take them off on their strimmer offer. Anything with blades made me nervous. But that, to me, tied together these two strands. That we are living in a world which is desperately dark and desperately in need of the light of Jesus. And at the other hand, if you act and you behave in a way that sets an example, that's like a lighthouse with a shining light across your community, you will make a difference, you'll transform communities, you'll transform neighborhoods, and you'll transform wildlife at a time when it is in desperate need. Every 3 seconds, we are losing a species of wildlife somewhere in the world. In the next 20 years, we're expected to lose 1 million species. In the next 5 years, we are likely to have lost every lemur species in Madagascar. We are likely to have lost a third of our mammal species in 20 years, half our bird species in 50 years, 60% of our insects in 40 years, 70% of our flowers and plants in 80 years. We are in real trouble. And yet we can tie these strands together. We can make a difference where we are. So I'm going to suggest 5 things that you as a church could do. They all begin with P. And the first is prayer. I would always put prayer at the top of the list. My grandmother, when she spent the last 2 years in bed, she said, "I'm still making a difference for the planet because although I can't get out, I can't dig, I can't plant, I can't talk very well, I can pray. And I know that prayer moves mountains. I know prayer makes a difference. And I will not cease praying until the day I meet Jesus." So if we feel that we're in a position where because of time and other commitments, we can't do anything else, the one thing that we can do is absolutely 100% pray and believe that those prayers will move mountains. The second thing is petition. I believe we've come to a time now where we need to challenge people when we see things that are massively wrong. I'm going to pick on one, because I could pick on millions, and that is palm oil. When you eat a chocolate bar, you eat something that will almost always have palm oil in it. Unless it has a label that says this palm oil has been sustainably sourced, you can more or less guarantee, and this includes you chocolate fans with chocolate spreads, and Mars bar fans and others, that palm oil has come from a plantation which has chopped down rainforest at some point in the last 15 years. Orangutans have between 5 and 10 years left in the wild, and the primary reason is our insatiable appetite for chocolates, biscuits, and cakes. So, that means petitioning companies that we know are not sustainable. If you eat a chocolate bar, you don't see the label, call them a customer service number and say, "I'm really sorry, but unless you change your sourcing for your palm oil, I'm no longer going to eat your chocolate bar or your cake." And believe me, that pressure makes an enormous difference. So, a part of that, and if you can hand this around, forgive the slightly rough way of doing this, but I've run out of sheets. If you want to find out about what churches are doing around the country to make a difference on this particular area and on good news stories like I've just shared elsewhere, then fill out your name and an email on the sheets going around between now and the end of the service, and you'll get access to a free monthly e-news that will tell you what people right around the country are doing to make a difference. So that's the petition. The third of the 5 is go plastic free. We're all into carrier bags and reusable carrier bags, but the bottom line is, within the next 10 years, we have got to get rid of all single-use plastic in absolutely everything. So next time you go to the supermarket and you're tempted to buy those lovely Mr. Kipling individually wrapped cake. So you have a layer of plastic, and then a wrap around the cake, and then a plastic sleeve, and you look at the back, and none of it's recyclable. We've got to the point now where you've just got to say, "I'm not going to buy that." Because that plastic, if it's not recyclable, will end up in landfill somewhere. And eventually it will break into tiny pieces, and it will end up in our seas and oceans and waterways. So we've got to vote with our feet on plastic if we're going to really make a difference. And that means moving well beyond our plastic bags. So have a think about being creative about plastic. Have a think about the things that you can cut out and change to make a difference. The fourth one is produce. So think about the things that we're buying. I'm going to use, again, just one example. When you clean your bathrooms, it's easy to use products that contain phosphates. They're horrible chemicals that make your sinks nice and shiny, but when you put them into the water, they don't break down. So it's making the fish populations go down. It's making our rivers birdless and insectless. The amount of phosphate that were in the rivers in Britain is astronomically high. And so that means you need to shift to companies that still make nice, cleaning, shiny products. And I'm going to just mention two as examples, not because I'm sponsored by any companies to say this. But one really good company, which is a family business, is Method. You pay slightly more for the products, but you get a full range of cleaning agents that have no nasty chemicals in at all. And so if we as a church find companies like that, that really make a difference and have no impact on wildlife, we're keeping our bathrooms and kitchens clean and we're doing something for the planet. The last one is praise. And this is the hardest of all. I generally, and I hate to say this, often don't watch natural history programs. And that's because you get lovely pictures like the ones we saw, but you know that there's a doom and gloom message coming at the end. And as somebody who works in that sector, I find myself switching off. And I think to myself, if I'm switching off, then I imagine quite a lot of other people are as well. We can get overwhelmed by bad news. And we get to a point where hearing bad news is no longer helpful. So it's good to be aware of the facts. It's good to be able to pray and act on the facts, like we've been saying. But when we see things happen that are really amazing, what's the best thing we can do? Is we can stand up and say, thank you. We can stand up and say, hallelujah, God's moved in this situation. And it means if we see a company doing something incredible, or a farmer doing something incredible, or an entrepreneur deciding they're going to clean up the ocean by themselves with the money that's behind them, rather than complaining and grumbling about it, which we are all good at doing, because we're British, is picking up the phone and saying, I just wanted to say, we've been pressurizing you to change from using palm oil. You have, and I want to say thank you on behalf of the community, on behalf of the church I represent, because that's really, really helping us to make a difference. And there's nothing more empowering to a company director or to a customer service department than somebody being really deeply positive about a change that they've made. Otherwise, it's all complaints. And I've seen that, and it's really exciting. So those are your five P's. Those are things that we can all do. But I would encourage you to make it part of your daily mission. The Anglican Church talks about the environment being the fifth mark of mission. Absolute rubbish. It is integral to the mission of every single church in this nation to make it a core part of their daily journey with Christ. And I really hope that you can take some new ideas, think about some new ideas, and let us know if you come up with great new ideas that we haven't thought of, because we've got lots of questions and not often all the answers. And hopefully I'll be able to come back and see how you're doing. And I hear you're nearly on silver awards for Eco Church, which is brilliant. So we'll be back here when you get silver award to celebrate that success. And we're really looking forward to that day. And thank you for having me this morning.